This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today with data privacy, a big concern that's very much front and center these days. As the FBI tangles with Apple about how to hack into the iPhone of one of the San Bernardino terrorists, it's raising big questions about how to balance online innovation and personal privacy. And this was very much the focus of a forum today at MIT, convened by Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey.
It's important to us that we take steps to guard against potential abuse, to make sure that data-driven innovations are a benefit for everyone.
The Attorney General was joined by a bunch of big thinkers on the data-driven digital economy and the role that a state like Massachusetts can play in encouraging innovation while protecting consumer privacy. Well, Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the Boston Globe, is one of our big thinkers who talks to us regularly about these issues, and he's with us now. And Hiawatha, it's always good to have you. How are you doing?
Glad to be here.
So let's start with that question that Maura Healey set up. What can a state like Massachusetts do to encourage innovation while also protecting consumer privacy? It seems like a delicate balancing act.
Well, I don't know that this is an issue that can be solved at the state level in any case. It seems to me that ultimately you're going to have some kind of a federal decision on this. It's sort of like what the CEO of Apple was talking about, where he's calling for some kind of a national dialogue with Congress and trying to figure out some kind of a standard to set for where the line would be drawn in cases like the famous Apple iPhone controversy. To what extent can a company like Apple be compelled to help basically break into its own products? Although I have to say, I thought that his comments this week, you know, at the Apple event in Cupertino, were a little disingenuous, because you know what he wants that dialogue to say. He says, "Well, we need to have a dialogue on this," but at the end of the day, what the dialogue should say is, "Do it Apple's way. Don't make us reveal what's going on inside our customers' phones."
Sure.
So I'm not sure whether there's any kind of compromise that's really open here. Either the phones are designed so that we can't get into them, or they're designed so that at least on occasion the government can get into them. And of course, the problem with that is if you open up some way to get into the phones, there's no way of being sure that it's only the government doing it. And of course, there are also cases where you wonder, do we want the government to be able to do it?
Yeah, these are big questions. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I wanted to ask you about this. You wrote about this yesterday in a really interesting piece. You called it the FBI's Second Thoughts and Second Chance for Privacy. And of course, this is all about the FBI's tangle with Apple. Now, the FBI, if I have this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, so they wanted to compel Apple to open that phone, but then the FBI said it's not necessary because we've got a third party that can do it, right?
Well, they're saying it may not be necessary. They were supposed to have a hearing on this on Tuesday before a federal judge. And then on Monday, they come out and they say, wait a minute, we need a 2-week delay. We have just on Sunday, in fact, they say on Sunday, somebody came forward with a method that they hadn't previously thought of that they think might work to help them get into the phone. Now, it's really funny, because I was doing a little reading on this, and there are stories in today in like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, talking about how ever since this whole controversy broke, hordes of security experts have been coming and saying to the FBI, look, you guys, we can think of 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different ways you might be able to do this. And the idea that they've only just found out that there are alternative ways has a lot of people raising their eyebrows, because I talked to a guy who was writing about this weeks ago saying, here's another way of doing this.
So what does that tell you, that the FBI just wasn't taking advantage of the wisdom out there, or what explains that?
I don't want to go too deeply into their motives, because there are several possibilities. One, they really have tried these methods already and they didn't work. That is possible, you know.
Yep.
Two, that their people just weren't smart enough to realize that there are these other alternatives. And three, they may have thought about doing these other things, but then said, you know what, we really would rather have a legal precedent. This is an amazingly good chance for them to get a precedent on the books that might force not just Apple, but other technology companies in the future to open up their products. I mean, in the case of a guy who murdered 14 innocent people, there aren't too many people who are feeling sympathy for, and the guy himself is dead on top of it. There aren't too many people feeling sympathy for Saad Farooq.
Yeah.
So this was a great chance to set a legal precedent. And some people think, yeah, you know, maybe they were pushing it too far and that's what they really wanted.
You know, now for privacy advocates, this idea that the FBI, at least for now, isn't going to continue to force Apple to hack into this phone, it sounds like a victory for privacy advocates. On the other hand, This is because there's apparently a third party who can hack in, or as you said, all kinds of other ways to hack into the phone. So what does that say about our privacy?
Well, we have to be careful about that. You don't want to expand that too big an issue, because the thing you have to remember is that this was an iPhone 5.
Okay.
Now, this is where things get really interesting, because since then, for example, the iPhone I have in my pocket is the iPhone 6S. And Apple has done an entirely different architecture with that phone. It has something on board called the Secure Enclave. It is a special encrypted chip built into the phone, and all this stuff is on the phone, and even Apple, at least as far as we now know, wouldn't be able to break in using any of the methods that are being talked about in this case. On the iPhone 5 that they found at the crime scene, they could do this stuff. The stuff they're talking about doing would not work on any newer iPhone. It just wouldn't work. And that's the problem that the Justice Department faces. As Apple and other companies design these things to be more and more secure, they are going to be honestly capable of saying, as far as we know, there's no way we can open our own phones. We're designing them that way. And a lot of security and police organizations are outraged by that. I mean, remember, back in the 90s, a federal law was passed telling the phone companies you have to design the telephone network. This is really pre-cell phone. You have to design the landline phone network so that we can tap it. Our phones are deliberately designed so that they're tappable. And they kind of want the same thing with cell phones. But in this case, it's going to be much easier for companies to design these products so that that's just not going to be practical unless the federal government goes and writes what some people call CALEA 2. The first law was called CALEA. They're saying we need CALEA 2, a law that will flatly say we have to be able to get into these mobile phones.
And,
but
yeah,
the problems with that are huge. The problems with that are huge.
Right. Right. And of course, and if they can't do it, if laws like that aren't written and technology continues to evolve the way it is, it leads to this possible phenomenon of going dark when all the data is basically encrypted, invisible. You say that going dark is inevitable. Is that right?
Well, I think it's pretty nearly is because, for a couple of reasons. One, everybody's going in that direction anyway. Apple, Android, they don't set this up by default, but Android phones can be programmed to be encrypted as well. And even if they banned Apple or Android from making their phones that way, there's plenty of software out there that you can install on your phone, apps that let you encrypt individual files. And there's just no way they can ban that stuff. A lot of it is made by companies outside the U.S. If people want to use encryption, they're going to use encryption. But the flip side is that isn't the same thing as entirely going dark. The Paris bombing gives you a perfect example of that. Encryption didn't really matter in that case, because what happened was they found one of the phones that was used by one of the people who attacked that nightclub. They didn't have to worry about encryption. They called the phone company and said, who has this guy been calling? They didn't have to get that's not encrypted information. That's in the phone records.
Yeah.
And they used that information to find the hideout where the rest of the guys were located, where they had that big shootout. Stuff like who you're calling, how long you're talking, all that kind of stuff, that's not encrypted. They'll still be able to get that. What they won't be able to get is exactly what people are saying or exactly what they're writing on their phones. That's a problem, though. That's still a problem, but it's not as big as we've been told.
Yeah, but in sort of pushing back against this idea that going dark is inevitable or going dark is already there, there's an argument out there that says rather than the world going dark, we're already doing so much electronically that there are fingerprints and electronic footprints more than ever before. So going dark is sort of virtually impossible.
That's exactly what I was just saying.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
The fact that you're using the cell phone, you're not going dark. You're telling everybody where you are the minute you pick up a cell phone.
Yes.
That's not going dark.
Yeah, which sort of raises an interesting set of warnings to the average consumer out there, right? I mean, just
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So how should we think
look
about
at
that?
And I don't want to make you feel paranoid. It's not necessarily a terrible thing. But for example, if you have a cell phone right now, the phone companies, they don't identify you individually, but they track things like where you go, where you shop, where you eat. They actually track this. And then they sell that to advertising companies so that if you eat regularly at a steakhouse, you open your phone and you start getting ads for steak because they know you're a steak eater. They don't know who you are. They just know you're a steak eater because the phone company told them you go to steakhouses. That kind of thing's been going on for years now. Mm-hmm. Everything you do with a mobile phone in your pocket is to some extent being tracked. If you're a privacy obsessive you know, you're just going to have to make up your mind how much you want people to know about your activities, because that stuff is being noticed. By the way, Apple, for all their talk about privacy, they're tracking you.
All right. Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the business section of the Boston Globe. You can find a link to his most recent op-ed piece on our website, radioboston.org. Hiawatha, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks a lot.